Football 52 is brought to you by Mark Larson, State Farm Insurance.
This is head coach of the Bears, Ed Lamb, and I want to tell you about my friend, Mark Larson, with State Farm Insurance. Mark grew up in Greeley and is always supporting the Bears and our wonderful community. When it comes to local, Mark gets it. A State Farm agent since 1982, Mark's passion is to help educate individuals about their insurance need and structuring a personal price plan on home and auto insurance. You want to work with the best? Then call Mark today at 356-8700 or visit his website, marklarsoninsurance.com.
Welcome into Football 52 with UNC head football coach Ed Lamb. I am Brady Hull. Coach, we got all the malfunctions fixed. That's why we were off, well, 2 weeks ago. We had an issue in the podcast studio. Everything's good now, but it's just been one of those weeks, man. We're just having a lot of those things happen.
It was. I have not dozens, but a handful of listeners who will reach out and text when an episode doesn't drop. So I guess there are some people out there listening. And then last week was the 4th of July week, which I give the players off. And typically, as soon as I give the players off, my philosophy is if the players are on campus, I'm on campus, and our coaching staff as well, which is actually unique in college football. I don't know any other college football staffs that do that. Most college football staffs, they take the summer off, especially the month of July, and they're doing camps all of June. So you hardly ever see your players. We don't feel like that's appropriate for UNC. I've kind of talked about this before. But my point is when we do give the players off, my mind is just elsewhere. And I consider this, I don't know why, but I consider this podcast and then the radio show that I do live with the guys after this here in the same studio, I consider it part of my work day.
Yeah. It's kind of part of, yeah.
Just I mean, it is. Yeah. Like, you know, I mean, you guys don't,
you're
you,
almost,
you don't pay me and I don't pay you for this. I don't know how it's supposed to work. I feel like, you know, you guys are giving me something, but I do. It's part of the job. I use it as part of the job to communicate important things.
Well, you're basically a staff member at this point.
That's big time.
You're here for almost close to 2 hours on a Friday. So you're basically a part-timer at this point, Coach.
I felt really like accomplished the first time. I don't know if you remember, but the first several times we did this, you would have me do like a mic test,
yeah.
You know, and then
yeah.
And then all of a sudden you don't do that anymore.
No, you're a pro now. Yeah. Well, you were a co-host with me earlier in the, I guess, spring, summer. So, I mean, you're a radio pro at this point.
That's,
so you'll be ready, you know, whenever you're done coaching football. There's a show waiting for you.
Sounds like you saw me differently after that. I graduated
like,
to co-host.
This guy doesn't need a mic check anymore. We don't have to worry about that. You were, and I got to say this. I don't know if you want me to tell this story, but we were having issues with this podcast equipment, and I was bragging to somebody about this the other day. I'm like, yeah, you know, a lot of coaches can be irritated. It's like, wow, what a waste of my time. You're down on your knees underneath. We're underneath this table. We're both under there looking to see if there's anything we can figure out. Not many coaches would stick around and try to help fix the problem. And that's just kind of who you are, man. So I had fun telling that story.
That's cool. I didn't know I made an impression doing that. I get myself into a lot of trouble trying to fix everything around our house. You know, I've got an old lawn tractor. I've got two lawn tractors. I use one of them to mulch or compost the horse manure out in the field. I've set it real low, and it's an old tractor, but it's always got something broke. But it's like it kind of excites me to fix things.
Oh,
you know?
I wish I had that.
And I know that from like a dollar time standpoint, trade off. Family time that it costs me. I know, like, my wife just puts up with it, but it's like, it, for some reason to me, it's relaxing and fun and a sense of accomplishment. So I really feel still like a failure for not being able to help get the soundboard working. Weeks ago.
Yeah, well, luckily we had a backup board. It was a board issue. I also gotta say, on the mowing thing, Coach, you convinced me. I went in, I got the electric mower.
Oh, did you get the Ego?
Yes.
Z6?
Yes. It is amazing.
It's amazing. Like, it's so quiet. I bring a speaker. You put a speaker in the cup holder. You can play music.
You can charge your phone.
There's no gassing up.
No.
There's no oil checks.
Oh, it's the best.
It's just like, I mean, it's incredible. And I do some rough, thick, tall pastures with that thing. So My neighbor, at the same time I got the Ego, he got the Gravelly, which is kind of a prosumer, you know, almost a commercial level zero turn. And yeah, it seems like from a horsepower standpoint and kind of the way it does its work, they seem very similar. But I do feel like a little bit like I'm that guy with the electric,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah. Well, because the one I had before was an old, I don't even know what it was. It was my father-in-law's. He's just letting us borrow it until we figure something out. And it's the opposite. You know, this thing's meant for oil rig sites, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
So it's really loud. It's got the brackets on the top to keep you from dying if you fall. So it was a little much for our situation, but we went all in. I got the trailer on it too. We bought one of those trailers you can get.
Nice.
Cause my wife's constantly having me dig something up. So that's been huge. And my kid will get in the back of it now. So, we kind of went all in, and that thing is just, it's amazing.
It's so
not
cool.
Recommended enough.
And when the mower's not on, like the way it just zips around completely silent, just, and it's got good speed.
First time I turn it on, I'm like, is it on? It's moving, and there's nothing. And when you turn the blade on, it's a little bit louder, but not much.
I've got a neighbor that kind of lives behind me, but you've got to go around this big circuitous route, maybe almost a half mile, more than a quarter mile, but maybe not quite a half. And I already had the mower out, and I needed to go check on him for something. And I just took the zero turn over there with the mower deck not on.
Oh yeah.
And it just zipped over there. It was funny.
Oh, I love it.
You know, picturing myself going down the street on that.
Oh, I do feel, cause I sit so much lower too. And so when I have to go out into the neighborhood, like to get outside to our front yard, driving down the road a little bit.
Yeah.
Do I look silly? I don't care. This is amazing. Yeah. It's so smart too. I risked it trying to mow the ditches and if you're too steep, it'll shut your blades off.
Yeah.
So, and that's good. You'd rather that than just power through and then you get off the ditch and you're in trouble. But it's great recommendation because I went in on that and it's been
fired
amazing.
Up.
Yeah.
What size deck?
Oh gosh.
The width?
I don't even know what is your width?
52, I think. 52 or 56. I think it's 56 actually.
I think it's 52.
Which I used to have a 48 on the regular lawn tractor.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how much just like a, you know, 8, 10, 12 inches makes.
The old one I had was 52, and this one covers the exact same amount of ground. So I think it's 52.
Nice.
I think so.
Good work.
And I just love plugging it in, man. It's all I have five gas cans that are full of gas still, and I still have a push mower to do the ditches, so I still have gas. But that's nice to know. I don't have to fill them up, you know, once every couple months.
Game changer.
It's a game changer. Coach, it is July 10th as we record this. We're in the last month of no football games. You guys got that first game against Weber State coming up at the end of August. And obviously that one's special. We've talked about it. First game under the lights at Nottingham Field. I know we're going to be out there doing a full-on, kind of a full day of remote activity and all that. So it's going to be exciting. I cannot wait for this game. You guys obviously still, you know, there's a lot of preparation, a lot of work to do before we get to that game. So we know July is the time you get to the 4th. Everybody seems to be healthy after the 4th of July festivities. And now, you know, when you get the guys back ready to go, it's going to be preparation for the season.
That's right. Yeah. We're on the march toward it. We're, literally making a very small percentage, but a percentage of our decisions about what we're practicing right now and how much we're practicing, about our guesses. Weber State has a brand new coaching staff, and so, you know, but at the same time, it's the idea that you would spend all of your summer and just anticipating game one is really going to set you up for a letdown in game two and beyond. And so we have to have messages and schematics and themes that are going to transcend throughout the season. But we also want the guys to be excited about game one and then be able to transition within 6-7 days to game two. And it can be really a challenge to find that messaging because the expectation of an opponent, of any opponent, but especially the first opponent with how long the offseason is, it is powerful.
Now, we have talked about gold brick games. Is that right? Gold brick?
Yeah.
Is this a gold brick game?
Yeah. So once I set the gold brick criteria, it's not up to me anymore. So it was up to me to set the gold brick criteria. But running through that again, the gold brick criteria is any teams ranked in the top 25, which Weber's coming off a little bit of a down year. So yeah, they probably won't be in the top 25, but they are a perennial national power in FCS football. So it's possible they could slip in. And I don't care, you know, I'm not going to go with, you know, Bob's Garage top 25, but if it's one of the two or three major kind of polls, then we would use that. The other one would be an FBS victory or a playoff / championship, so postseason.
This one's, even if it's not a gold brick game, it still feels like this is a benchmark game because first game under the lights. Yeah. I mean, it's an exciting time. Yeah. Somebody, a listener, was driving by the stadium the other day, shot us a text and must have seen the lights going, yeah, in, maybe, because they were sending, we had a listener spy basically out, yeah, there, Coach, and they're like, they were pumped about it.
Yeah, I'm so pleased about that. The feedback, the excitement that I hear from the community. I'm sure there are those that like weren't aware that we didn't have lights, not aware that college football teams have lights. Seems like an expense, you know, there's always companies and our universities had to cut back. And, you know, so even though it's being done with fundraised and revenue dollars, that there still could be a case to be made. Well, that fundraising effort could go to somewhere else. And I understand all that, but it seems to me like there is a lot of excitement about it. And it really is just like the cost of doing business. I mean, the reality is we were the equivalent of a radio station without a studio. Yeah. You know, I mean, we were doing it differently than literally every other Division I football team in the country has lights and night games and the ability, at least I think Notre Dame has changed, but for a long time, Notre Dame and Cal were, they didn't want to install stadium lights, but they would bring them in. Musco has, is the number one light company, and they bring in like four semis. The lights just pop up within an hour or two, and then you have this broadcast quality, the amount of lumens, et cetera. And I tried to do that here, but it's $40,000 a game. And obviously the university was like, you know, on a one-time expense, we cannot allow that.
Yeah. No, you can, there's several people we've talked to just throughout the last few months that there's the light stuff, how the season went last year, there's certainly a lot of progress being made. You've got to be feeling that too. Just the excitement around this program, which there hasn't been a ton of that excitement for a while. I mean, there's excitement when you get a new coach coming in and then you have these benchmarks. Last season, I felt it. There felt like a turn for the first time in a while for this football program.
I've talked about it a little bit on this show and in the media at times, and a lot to my staff, because it's important for us to view, chase, and recognize benchmarks. And two of those benchmarks are that when we begin to be inspired by the commitment level and the leadership level of the team, and we have this feeling like, okay, we need to take a half step back and see if the team takes another half step forward, because player-led teams are the only type of championship teams. And then the other one is when the when we start to feel gratitude toward the administration, especially at a place like this where it's easy to point to obstacles, and you know, you can point at the athletic director, say, "Oh, the budget's not, you know, as good as whatever school." You can do that so easily. It's an easy target, but the athletic director took on the same challenge that we did as football coaches, right? Like Darren Dunn took this job knowing that it's a difficult job, especially in football, right? That it's the most resource intensive sport there is. And so like he didn't come in here blind to that, right? Andy Feinstein and the next president, you know, now that Andy's retiring from at least the presidential level of his career, the president takes that on. And they decide, you know, how much resources to put toward football. But, you know, it's not like we have the most overall university level budget in the Big Sky. So to put football in the top quartile of budgets would be, you'd be robbing something else on campus, right? Yeah. So when we can, I'm getting a little long winded here, but when we can recognize as a football staff and share that with our team that the administration is now stretching. All these dollars and even the fundraising efforts, if it's all fundraised dollars going into the lights, for example, that those fundraising efforts could have gone to some other area, some other sport of campus or the athletic department. And So it's humbling to see progress being made that's really outside of our own purview, because we only, as a football staff, we really have to focus on what we can control. It's my job a little bit as the head coach to be able to say, hey, on an intermediate term, long term, whatever, these are some things that we need to sustain success over time at the highest level nationally. But I can't let those asks distract me or frustrate me if the answer is no.
Coach, coming up with this season, obviously we said we're getting close to it. Have your expectations changed a little bit? I mean, I know from day one your expectations were we're going to be a playoff team. Yeah. Do you feel stronger about that in any way, or is it every year you feel the same way, or is there something a little extra juice this offseason?
Yeah, to set the record straight, it was multiple championships.
That's your goal.
That's the only level of non-failure. The 100%. Goal is an okay word, but it is the task. If we do not win championships here, multiple championships, we will have failed our mission. So that's, and that's why, I've explained this before, but that's why the portal was never an answer for us. We could not build, in my opinion, we would never be able to build a championship level team with the portal. We would have been able to build a winning team. We would have been able to build a team that won more games sooner, because we would have had better talent. Obviously, a portal kid is on average going to be much more prepared than a high school kid. And we've been just recruiting at the high school level. Probably, I don't know of any other Division I school in America that's signing as many high school kids as we have over the last 4 years since the portal really became the number one tool for recruiting. I've explained to you and anyone else who listen, I had a high school coach on campus just yesterday. We don't even open the portal. We don't access the portal. It's not part of our plan. And the whole reason for that is we believe that the retention and development and long-term stability of our program ceiling is higher with the high school level recruit, especially the Colorado recruit. So, again, feel like I'm getting a little long-winded on a lot of answers today, but that's, I could not jump into the portal, do a quick fix, and expect to win a championship. So we had to decide how to invest in this program, invest our time, invest our resources, and put up with the inevitable early frustrations along the way.
Yeah. Well, and it just seems like, too, and we've talked about this, that maybe there's even more of a buy-in from these guys, because a lot of them are state of Colorado dudes, but they also see the investment of how you view the roster, of building it from the ground up. And a lot of times players look at that and say, hey, they're investing in us. Our buy-in has multiplied because of that investment.
100%. Yeah. I think any company would be the same, right? Like any company, local business here in Greeley, could decide that they're going to go recruit talent nationally. Well, that type of talent that you're bringing in from some other area, they're not going to suddenly get here to Greeley and say, this is it for me.
Yeah, right.
That's the type of ambition and plan that they're going to try to get somewhere else. We have a team right now where the vast majority of our players know our players' parents, because they're right here in Colorado, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's not a Thanksgiving where I'm having guys over to my house because they're from Florida and Texas and can't afford to get home, and like, they're going to their teammates' house first, of course.
Yeah.
You know, they don't want to hang out with me socially as much as I hope they respect me. We're not friends like that. They can't relax with me in the way that they could. And so we have this really tight-knit, Colorado-based community. And we've signed several portal players each year, but they're 9 out of 10 of them are Colorado kids that went and played elsewhere. You know, we have guys from that went to Washington and Iowa State and Kansas State and Indiana State, and they wanted to come back to home, Colorado, and play with kids that they grew up with and know and played against in football, played with in high school. And it's our own team that is recruiting those portal kids, and we don't even, we wait for them to call us. And those have been great, solid additions, but they fit what we're looking for.
Yeah, and I think that that's again, you pick the right guys that could come in and fit with this core group, and you've been picky with that, you know, and finding these guys that make sense for what you're trying to do. Now, you talk about having high school coaches on campus, talking to them. Is there a high school in the state of Colorado in particular that has been just above and beyond as far as like access, communication? Is there any high school, or are they all pretty good? Because it sounds like you have a really good relationship with a good chunk of these high schools.
Yeah, these high school programs are starving for Division I college coaches to come through. Like the RMAC schools have an amazing reputation for recruiting Colorado kids, and they've been so successful. There are so many strong Division II, that's the RMAC, the Rocky Mountain Athletic Conference. And, you know, like CSU Pueblo and Colorado School of Mines, they're kind of the ones that are always at the top. But several other of these schools, even Chadron in Nebraska, I mean, they are up and down this state. They are in the doors. But, you know, Colorado and Colorado State are not. And it's and for a long time, UNC was not. I mean, all schools are going to say, like UNC would say, yeah, we recruit Colorado kids, mm-hmm. and CSU and Boulder say that now, right? Like, oh, sure. You know, that's important to us. But if you're not signing them, then you don't believe in them enough, at least the ones that are going to place like UNC or the RMAC. Like all of those kids theoretically are good enough or could be good enough to play at the highest levels, and they prove it all the time. RMAC kids go to the NFL. Big Sky kids go to the NFL. So those schools have to make their decisions. I'm not sitting in their chairs, but to answer your question, when the high school coaches see a Division I program come in, it's a game changer for them and their program. Mm-hmm. And they want to bring their players over to meet us. And one of the advantages we have at UNC is it is, or at least was, founded as a teacher's college. And so many of the educators in the state, from the counselors and administrators when you walk into the school to the high school coaches themselves, they went to UNC. And so they want to help. They're proud that we're out there putting in the time. And I've heard over and over again from all the coaches in the state how much they appreciate the fact that we're there. And they have a lot of complaints about the other Division I programs in the state.
Coach, how difficult is it to really commit to that, to recruiting locally? Because like you said, I've heard whatever school we're talking about, I've heard every coach say, we're going to recruit locally. And then you might see, like CSU, you might see a name or two. CU, maybe, if we're lucky, you see one. Yeah. Even with UNC in the past, I brought up players in the past that were like, wow, Austin Eckler is one of those guys. He was on a podcast saying, yeah, UNC didn't even talk to me. He was in Eaton, Colorado. We broadcasted his games, obviously, way before you got here.
Yeah.
How difficult is it to make that commitment? Because you're also looking at guys, maybe not who the type of player they are today, but you also have to look at what kind of player will they be in three years.
Yep, exactly. And that's, I mean, you look at this, like, CSU would never have given a sniff to any of our players in the recruiting process over the first, you know, 2-3 years that I was here in recruiting, and still now. We are not bumping into them really head to head on a recruiting level. But it's our vision, and we have full confidence as a coaching staff that we can build a team that can compete with the Division I FBS programs all day long. It just, you know, it's just a matter of time before our guys grow enough and learn enough to stand toe-to-toe and block and tackle the players at the highest level of football. And I think that's starting to show up, right? Like we have players that we're recruiting that had no other offers that are now getting Division I opportunities, right? And when we have the chance to go head-to-head against, you know, CSU the last couple of years, Wyoming next year, Colorado the year after that. That's an important game to our guys, but it's also an important litmus test because we respect, you know, the talent that they've accumulated versus the talent that we're developing. And so I think it completely comes down to just philosophically how the head coach, for the most part, thinks that they can climb the ladder, right? Ohio State doesn't have these issues. Ohio State's at the top of the ladder. When Ryan Day was there, Ryan Day's the greatest coach in history. Well, and before him, you know, it was Jim Tressel. And before him, you know, like, I mean, Nick Saban, awesome. Way to go, man. But, like, it's only, like, coincidence that Bear Bryant also coached there. Mm-hmm. You know, like,
there's a theme.
There's a theme there. You know, like, look at all the amazing coaches that have come through Boise State. Man, they must be good at hiring. I think there's a little something else at play. So the question is, as a head football coach, how do you take your program with where they have existed historically on the recruiting food chain and on the tables? The tables are a word for the finishes, the order of conference finishes, the number of wins per year. How do you raise that? And I don't think with us, it's let's go take a bag of money and buy some portal kids. I don't see how we would do that.
Well, and then, you know, there's a good chance with the way college football goes now too. You invest that money and maybe they're here for a season. And that's tough too.
Yeah. Like, and personally, I'm going to pontificate and jump out of my own lane here, but I don't see that as an avenue for CU or CSU either. Yeah,
right.
I see that as a quick fix. I see that as a way to a bowl game. I don't see that as a way to conference and national championships. And so I think I don't mean to be critical of the way they're doing it. What I have become is a real advocate for this state and the high school kids in this state. And I do think that there's plenty of talent here in this state for it to be, even if CSU and CU started recruiting this state, I still would know that we have enough players here. I felt the same way when I was coaching in Utah, and over decades that has proven to be true. They, you know, BYU, Utah, Utah State, Weber State, Southern Utah, they are all strong and they are all fundamentally based in Utah kids. And it's about the same population. State of Utah and the state of Colorado have about the same population.
Well, I'm excited to see this this group in action here very, very soon. I know I've asked you before about nervous. You say, hey, I don't buy into that word, nervous. Yeah. Butterflies at all? Excitement? What are those emotions that are going on here in almost mid July?
I work hard for myself, and I talk to our players about reframing the nervous, anxiety, butterflies, however they want to call it. We reframe that too. That is our body getting ourselves ready to do something spectacular.
Yeah,
and it doesn't. You don't do amazing things without being. Whether you want to call that nervous, excited, aroused, like whatever your word of choice is, we don't go out and nonchalant your way through a football game. We're not playing, you know, darts. We're not curling. We're not playing billiards. Like this is a game of intensity and courage. And courage only is necessary where there's fear. And so we have to learn to embrace those types of feelings to bring out the best in us.
You had mentioned before we started the podcast, you know, hey, all guys came back healthy after Independence Day and all that stuff. So you always just hope everybody's doing the right things, not getting too crazy out there with their summer vacations or whatever they might do. But you know, just how impactful is that? Obviously, knowing that guys took care of themselves, got their bodies ready, their minds ready, and put themselves in a position to be equipped to start fall camp.
Yeah, I often feel like a broken record, you know, when people say, you know, how are you going to get some time off this summer? Are you going to get some time off for the 4th of July or the month of May or whatever? I see people around more. I try to get to the golf course more and stuff like that during certain times of the year when the players are off. And so often because I get a lot of the same questions because my line of work is public, I give a lot of the same answers. Mm-hmm. I try not to do that, but so often I explain to people that when the players are off, it's just like, it's almost the most stressful time of the year for me because I worry about them all as if they're my sons. Like it's my job to help them achieve their goals. And if somebody goes and burns their hand on a firework or falls off a dirt bike or, you know, sprains an ankle playing basketball, injured skiing, snowboarding. I mean, there's just a never-ending list of these aren't like, you know, nightmares and fears that I have that are unfounded. I actually have a list of all the ways that I've lost guys to a season, you know, and it's just crushing. It doesn't always crush your team, right? Because other guys can potentially step up if you have a strong roster. But it's my job to somehow help every guy on the team achieve their goals, even though a lot of times that's mutually exclusive. Mm-hmm. When I'm helping, when I consider it my duty to help every linebacker on the team achieve their goals, and all of their goals are to probably start and be all conference and make it to the NFL, it's almost impossible for me to achieve that. But it's a task that I have to take on because it's just, I think it's the job of a head coach, the duty.
Coach, when does fall camp start up officially for you guys?
We're going to start right at the end of July.
Okay.
The NCAA has a rule. You have your first practice 30 days before the first game. And I have an agreement with Weber State. Weber is maybe not quite as challenged as us budgetarily, but they are, you know, in the bottom half of the conference. And so I have an agreement with their head coach that even though we bumped the game to a Friday, so we moved it up one day, we weren't going to incur the expense of having one more day of training camp. Because it's, you know, you think about housing a whole football team, even one day is a huge expense.
Sure.
It's one of, I mean, you talk about that's going to be three extra meals for a whole team and a coaching staff because we're there all day, right? So you got to feed the staff as well and the support staff and everything. They're 16, 18-hour days. You know, you wouldn't be no way to get home and back and eat. So, and then you house the players too. So that goes into their stipend or if you're housing them in the dorm or whatever. So the Weber State coach was happy to agree to that. And it's just a gentleman's agreement. I'm not snooping around there and they're not snooping around here, but we're going to start, you know, one day later than we actually could.
So what do the next, I guess, 2 or 3 weeks look like for this program?
Yes. So we practice twice a week without pads, and that's called a walkthrough, but it's, you know, it looks a lot like a practice. There are some things that we can't do contact-wise during that kind of walkthrough summer access period. They lift 4 days a week. And on the 2 days that we do the practice football type activities, the other 2 days where they lift, they do speed development. And one day is concentrated on volume or long length speed, what we call, kind of stretching out the hamstrings, getting to top end speed. And the other is more change of direction, short burst starts and stuff like that. And then the weekends have been off now for well over 2 years. Yeah, I've talked to you before about we used to train them on Saturday morning to give them a reason to get off the street on Friday night. We had a lot of guys throwing up on Saturday morning. And going back to the nerves thing, you know, this program was a win or lose, we booze mantra.
Hmm.
And that's the way that a lot of young kids deal with the anxiety of performing, especially in football. It's like, hey, win or lose, we booze, which means, hey, let's go out and give it the old college try, but don't get all stressed out, man.
Yeah,
you know, like, it's all good, bro. No, that's it's not all good. We are here to win. We put in way too much work, time, and effort. And, you know, the days of needing to get the team up on Saturday in order to motivate them to go to bed on time on Friday and somehow expose those that don't, like, those days are over, because anyone who's currently doing that in our program is just naturally falling behind, and they also have a peer pressure that exists because they're not with their teammates. There's too many guys that care about football right now. Everybody's not making perfect choices. I'm not going to say that. I mean, these are young kids at a developmental stage in their lives, and I'm on it and I want to help them, but it's not cool right now to sabotage your football career for the UNC Bears.
It seems like with that old adage, you know, win or lose, we booze, you got a bunch of guys that are like, hey, it's cool, I'm playing Division I football to get through college, but, you know, it'll be over with soon enough, whatever. It's just we're doing it because we're just good enough to be on a Division I team. Getting rid of that mentality and getting guys in that don't have that mentality, these are guys that want to achieve goals. You know, whatever you want to call it. These are guys that they want to win here. They want to just see how far they can take football. This isn't just kind of a walkthrough. You know, let's just get through college. Oh, by the way, I get to say I was a Division I football player at the end of the day. That's good enough. That doesn't seem like that's on anybody's mind at UNC these days.
Right. Yeah, no, and these are also the types of kids we're recruiting, right, where it's like, when they choose to do something, whatever that is, and football doesn't have to be their only interest in life, but, you know, whether it's kind of the big important chunks of their lives, like the academics, the family life, the social life, the spiritual life, when they choose to make something important, They want to be good at it and perform well at it. And so you see that now with our GPA. You see that with our community service, which is a social and a spiritual aspect. There's a social and a spiritual aspect to that. That's what's inspiring us as coaches right now to be around these players, is that's the culture. And we have to continue to find ways to facilitate that, but also to step back and create a void that the players will step forward and step into, because they really have the ability to lead with that. Our best players now are our highest performers. You know, look at Blake Wesslin and Levi Johnson, the two that were taken to the Big Sky Media Days. They're just great examples of that. You know, it's like they're going to be so successful in life. And you can see it right now in their academics and the academic, like Levi's academic rigor, the fact that he's basically pursuing a path through engineering at UNC that no one else is, right? Because he just forged that path by working with the college administrators, like, hey, I want to be an engineer. You don't have engineering, so how do I go about doing this?
Mm-hmm.
And so he's probably got the most rigorous curriculum academically of anyone on our team. And like Blake Wesslin's never had a B. You know, it's all A's. It's incredible. And those guys, they're just two, but they're representatives. They're not out in the front necessarily. They're at the front, but they've got others with them. It's incredible.
I was thinking of you guys last night and your players. I'm watching the Rockies game. And two nights ago, they started a new pitcher, a rookie pitcher, Hughes. I'm blanking out on the first name, Hughes. But they're doing a sideline interview with him during the game last night because he's off. And his demeanor was just awesome. He's even thinking about, med school on the side, stuff like that. It's crazy. He's got big goals, baseball being the number one. But it was just the way he was talking. And my wife's sitting there watching too. She goes, he seems like a really nice guy. And I was like, yeah, that stuff matters. When like the Rockies are trying to change their culture. Mm-hmm. They've had historically a bad culture. And when you start to hear a bunch of guys that suddenly it's about we, and it's, you know, they're approachable, they're easy to talk to. You can tell they got a good head on their shoulders. I said, that's so important in sports when you're trying to change the tide. And that's what I made that connection to UNC after talking to so many of your players over this past, especially this past year. You feel that. These are great young dudes that you know that beyond football, they're going to do other things too. But right now, the main thing is the main thing, and they are focused on this. So I think that is so important, having those guys that are doing extremely well in their schooling, but also just in representing this team.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's Moneyball. That phrase just has to hit over and over and over, whether you're the Colorado Rockies administration or one of the UNC football coaches. But, you know, that scene in Moneyball where Billy Bean says, if we try to do it like the Yankees in here, we'll get beat by the Yankees out there. Maybe I got a word or two wrong.
No, that's pretty good.
If you don't have the resources of the Yankees, you cannot beat the Yankees by doing it the Yankees way. And so maybe the Yankees aren't talking about character building and getting their players involved in the community. But I saw firsthand, I went to the Rockies game on July 3rd.
Yes, you did.
That's the fireworks night. And that was a packed stadium, and the players responded. And, you know, you talk about the difference that lights, fireworks, game environment can make to bring people into the stands for that day. I know they're not selling out all their games. I know they're not winning a ton of games, but they kicked some butt. I think it was 14-2 or something like that.
It was a good one for you to go to.
It was a great one to go to. Yeah. I had a great time. I got a taco that was like 18 inches long and like 6 inches wide. It was amazing.
Oh, the food's incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's incredible there. I wanted to make a quick note on another player of yours. You'll be proud. You talked about guys making the right choices, you know, during this 4th of July holiday and stuff. Well, we saw your guy, Miles McClarity. He and his mother came out to our stupid hot dog eating contest last Friday. And jokingly, want to be clear, I asked Miles to join. I was like, you should get in on this. Yeah. He's like, no, man, I can't do that. Yeah. So I wanted to say, he was not tempted to join the hot dog eating contest and destroy his body like us idiots were.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. That's good stuff. Some of the guys might justify it. They need the sodium or something.
Oh, man. It was a rough go. I got 4.5 down. So
4.5 hot dogs.
That was it.
I guess it all depends on the size of the hot dog.
Well, it was the bun issue. The buns were, they got like expensive buns there at Big City Roadhouse. These were not your cheap, thin, you know, ballpark hot dog buns. These were the big ones. Tasted really great. But once I hit that wall, that fourth one, I was like very aware of the texture of a hot dog. And it was awful. I think I beat, the only person I beat, we had a lady from Mosquito Joe, one of our great advertisers here. Yeah. She was just there to eat lunch. She was eating it with a fork. That was the only person I beat. And I said, so my goal is to beat the lady eating the hot dog with a fork. And that was all I did.
She got 4 and you got 4.5.
I think she got like maybe not. You couldn't even count hers because it was all cut up. Yeah. And she was trying to do the little kid thing where you can't tell how much they really ate because she just messed with it a lot.
Sure.
So that was the only one. Brian, of course, beat me. Several people were there.
He told me that first thing when I walked in the door.
He's very proud of that.
He's bragging about that.
Very proud. We got former Rockies voice, former Nuggets voice, Jerry Schimmel, to come up and broadcast this event. So that probably had to be top of the mountain for Mr. Jerry Schimmel, I'm sure.
What was the prize to trade?
For, like, the winner got free food for a year at Big City Roadhouse. So a weekly, like a $25 gift certificate a week.
Okay.
Yeah, they got a little punch card so they can just use it. We couldn't win it, obviously, being station people, but we did it for the love of the game, I guess you could say.
Okay, yeah. I was judging, but I would.
Yeah.
I would do that.
Yeah, you would do it?
For that price, yeah.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll get you in there next year.
Yeah.
Something to think about. Coach, what else you got going on here in the next week or so, as far as personally for you?
Yeah, I've got we have an autism camp. Up in Glenwood Springs that we take our son to, and that's coming up and always kind of on the countdown toward training camp. He loves that. The organization is called Ascendigo, and one of my neighbors and good friends got me involved. They've got a son that's very similar in the, I guess I heard the other day the term severe autism is now being phased out in favor of significant autism. I don't know how to quantify any of it. You know what I mean? Like as we compare our challenges with our respective sons, there's a lot of times where I can see that your son, he can function at a higher level with some things, but you also have some frustrations and challenges that I don't have. And, with raising our son. And so it's hard for us as like lay people. When I hear that I need to be using a more correct word, I want to do that and be respectful. And at the same time, I want to say like all these words get somehow twisted and then become out of fashion and
sure.
It's hard to keep up with, you know what I mean? And so you can feel my nervousness here because this is of public record.
Yeah.
I've said severe autism so many times in my life to describe my son and now it's significant, but back to the point, they do an amazing job with these kids and meet them at their level, all kids on the spectrum. And we really, really enjoyed that time. So I'm looking forward to that and kind of winding up the summer. It's also a trigger for me. It's become a trigger because I know that when that occurs, it's go time.
Then it's go time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so looking forward to go time. I know our players are. They've put in so much hard work.
Coach, I can't wait. I'm really looking forward to it. We've loved following this program. You know, here at the station, we felt closer to you, to the head football coach of football. Oh, head football coach of football. That was great. We felt closer to the head coach than we ever have here. I know you and Tanner, you guys have golfed together. I joke, but also serious. You're kind of a part of the weird, wacky little family that we have here. And you know what? We're not alone in that. We talked to so many people. I was visiting with a friend of mine from Bank of Colorado, my guy, Sean Ostoff out there.
Oh, yeah.
Really hopeful, really excited. Our mutual friend and ours and Rick, who's with the Rick Peak, of course, at the NOCO Autism Connection. I was visiting with him. There's more and more stories of these. Like, Ed is an amazing individual. We look forward to following this program. And that's the buy-in that people have always wanted to see from the head coach here at UNC. And so people are ready. People are pumped up. It's going to be a fun season.
I'm trying to lead that right now. And the complete goal is to get to a point where like 5 or 10 years from now, and they're talking about the championship teams, the big sketch championship teams at UNC. They're like, who was the head coach back then when they had that great play, you know, when Miles McClarity was playing strong safety, you know, and Blake Westland was playing defensive end. Who was the head coach? Yeah. That's when we've made it as a program, is when, you know, the head coach was lucky to be here at that time.
I want it to turn into that, where it's like we have these bar conversations, where it's just like, man, do you remember that they had that really good safety that year? And oh my gosh, they were stacked. I want more of those stories. Yeah. And I have a feeling we're going to get more of those stories, so I can't wait.
It's coming.
All right, Coach. Yeah. Appreciate you, man. We'll catch up with you soon.
Thank you.
Football 52 is brought to you by Mark Larson, State Farm Insurance.
This is head coach of the Bears, Ed Lamb, and I want to tell you about my friend, Mark Larson, with State Farm Insurance. Mark grew up in Greeley and is always supporting the Bears and our wonderful community. When it comes to local, Mark gets it. A State Farm agent since 1982, Mark's passion is to help educate individuals about their insurance need and structuring a personal price plan on home and auto insurance. You want to work with the best? Then call Mark today at 356-8700 or visit his website, marklarsoninsurance.com.